Hi, everyone. In this interview, I'm talking to L.L. Barkat. And Laura is the author of Rumors of Water, which is a book about creativity and writing, and it's won a couple of awards. She's also the founder of TweetSpeak Poetry, which is a website that talks about poetry and writing, and also the founder of TS Poetry Press, which is a publishing company. So, Laura, thank you so much for coming. I'm so glad to talk to you.
I'm so glad to be here.
Yeah. So why don't you tell us how you got into publishing? I know you've been a writer for a long time. Mm-hmm. How did you transition from being a writer to being a publisher?
Baby steps. So I had a book with a traditional publisher, and that experience gave me things to think about. Mm-hmm. As you probably know, most writers don't make any money from their books.
Yes, I do know that, unfortunately.
Well, that kind of, when you're with a traditional publisher, and this is nothing against a traditional publisher, but because it costs about $10,000 to produce a book, mm-hmm, through traditional publishing means, they really need to recoup their costs. So that partly what that translates into for the writer is a very low royalty.
Yeah.
And so for me, when I started the publishing, it was really the idea, like, I'm going to publish some poetry and, mm-hmm, I'm going to give my authors much bigger pieces of the royalties because they deserve it. Yeah. And using print on demand, so I can do that.
Yeah.
And so it just was a, let me see how this goes.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
So with print on demand, right, you don't have to put as much money up front.
Well, the money that I put up front is for the editorial process, mm-hmm, because every book is edited by a professional editor, mm-hmm, for photography, for miscellaneous things that aren't going to be that interesting,
right,
to your audience. But I probably put about $1,200 to $1,500 up for,
yeah,
each book. Okay.
Yeah.
But what you don't have to put forward is that printing cost,
yeah,
of say a 3,000 book, you know, print run, and then have to house it somewhere. All that costs money. Mm-hmm. You don't have to do that with print on demand.
Yeah. Yeah. I think publishing, I mean, at least for, you know, smaller publishing companies, it's, mm-hmm, makes a lot of sense, and it's a lot more doable than it used to be. So yeah, that's great.
We would not exist if print on demand did not exist.
Right.
And that doesn't mean, I mean, other small presses have other means, but this, I'm just saying that if it were not for print on demand, I would not have a press.
Yeah. Yeah. So. And I know your website and even kind of this publishing company sort of came out of your experience with social media, with TweetSpeak Poetry. It's even named after, you know, Twitter. So, mm-hmm, how do you use social media? What happened there?
Well, it sounds like you're asking a few different questions. I would say up front that the press, mm-hmm, in some ways is a separate, began its own life,
right,
without a direct Twitter connection. Mm-hmm. Really, it was just, when I thought about how to name the press, I thought, what do I have that already exists that I can tie this to, kind of make sense?
Yeah.
So I named it, you know, in a kind of related way, but the two were really separate at first. And TweetSpeak Poetry started as a joke, which was, there were four of us on Twitter one night, a teacher and two businessmen and me, and we're going back and forth, and one of them dared another one to write me a poem. And the other one said, a poem while I'm, what did he say? While I'm tweeting and making a sandwich and on the phone with Dell. That was his way of saying I'm not writing a poem. That's right. But anyway, out of that, I said, I feel like I'm at a party. And the other person said, well, okay, when's the party? And I said, oh, you really want a party? Okay, fine, Thursday night. And we set this date. And we wrote poetry together for a straight hour.
Wow.
Just based on the question, who were you in my dream? And we had so much fun doing it that we kind of started doing it every week for a little while. And then I said to Glenn Young, I said, listen, I have so many blogs already. Cannot manage another one. I said, but if I kind of set it up, will you help me manage this blog?
Mm-hmm.
And that, so TweetSpeak Poetry was born.
Yeah.
And it was really at first just a place to archive our Twitter poems. And then Glenn started doing this fun thing where he began to weave the tweets together into larger poems. It was nothing serious at first. So.
Yeah, but it's kind of evolved into this landing page for poetry and social media and even even fiction writing.
Yes. Well, and so to me, I mean, I know you're trying to partly ask me about social media. To me, the greatest things come particularly out of Twitter. It is a place where very quickly you can discover sort of people's basic ways of relating and their way with words. Because if you can have a way with words in 140 characters, you know, I want to know about you.
Yeah.
In fact, one of the people I just hired recently that have, she kind of, we were teasing one of my editors about how her tweets often have typos, and this person was kind of listening in, and she said, I can spell. And I just sort of tucked that away in the back of my mind, and the following week I thought, I need to talk to this person. And, you know, and I had seen her around before on Twitter and so forth, but anyway, ended up hiring her as a social media associate. So
that's so funny that
and I have made many connections myself. I've gotten writing opportunities through Twitter.
Wow.
Connected with, in fact, you may have noticed, I don't know, some of our recent content went to the Huffington Post.
Yeah.
And then also to Paris Review.
Wow.
All of that happened through Twitter.
No way.
Mm-hmm, yep.
So that's so funny that this kind of social media thing has evolved into bringing you opportunities as a publisher, as a writer. I love that.
Yes, and I would recommend for anyone who has limited time and interest in social media to concentrate their efforts on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
It's there's a lot more return on investment.
Yeah. I mean, in my experience, I started sharing some of my blog posts on Twitter and interacting both on Twitter and Facebook when I was just first starting the Write Practice. And at first, I got a lot more engagement, started a lot more conversations, had a lot more views from Facebook. But as, you know, it evolved, that started to dwindle because I was tapping out my friends, you know, my friends stopped wanting to read my stuff.
Yeah, but it's
so don't blame them.
Facebook has changed the way they operate.
Right.
And that has been a real a difficulty, not just for single authors like yourself, you know, writers like yourself, but for businesses as well. And many of these businesses have invested a great deal in Facebook. Facebook changed the rules on them.
That's true, yeah.
And everyone has seen their content become less and less visible on Facebook. While Twitter, like I said, it's fair game.
Right.
If you're great at what you do on Twitter, the world will see it.
Right. Yeah, so can you share just maybe three or four suggestions that writers who are new to Twitter can use to start using it and enjoying it? I think Twitter can be really overwhelming for the new, the new Twitter user. How can writers share their work on Twitter without feeling, too overwhelmed?
Well, I don't know that I can save anyone from being overwhelmed. And to that, I have to say that some of my authors are not social media people.
Yeah.
Really, and I do not push them in that direction. Hmm. I have one author who does a very vigorous sales of his book, but he does it mostly, it's on the ground. He speaks, he sells to the bookstore where he works.
Mm-hmm.
He does really well. And another one of my poets, same thing. She's a retreat speaker. She's more of an on the ground kind of person.
Yeah.
And she's going to teach a workshop for us now. These things are her style, kind of go deep and go slow.
Right. That's good.
And so, if that's the kind of person you are, you may want to pursue more on the ground strategies. Now, each of these people also has a Twitter account, but you won't see them there as much as you'll see some of my other authors.
Mm-hmm.
My most successful authors, by the way, all have much larger platforms than just simply a social media platform.
Mm.
So they have written for places like HarperCollins, or they have written for The Atlantic,
mm-hmm.
or you need a platform that's bigger than Twitter and Facebook.
Yeah.
If you want to be on Twitter to kind of meet some people, get some connections, I would say the very beginning is difficult when you have five followers, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's very hard. What I recommended, and I did this with one of my editors that I hired last year. When he first came to us, he had 7 Twitter followers. That was okay. I said, I'm going to show you how to do this. And I don't actually know. He's not with us anymore, and I haven't looked recently. But the last that I looked, he had over 400 followers.
Oh, wow.
Which is great. I think he probably has more than that now, but in a very short time, he went from 7 followers to over 400. I said to him, I want you to go and follow 20 people.
Hmm.
I said, don't follow more than 20 people, please. If you go out and follow 100 people and you have 7 followers, you're going to look like a spammer.
Yeah.
So he went out and he followed 20 people. I said, when you get 11 followers, I want you to go out and follow another 20 people.
Hmm.
And this is what he did for a little while. He would go follow another 20 people, another 20 people, and he was a little behind, but he would get, some of those would follow him back and some would not.
Mm-hmm.
It eventually equalized for him. The other thing is, you have to pay attention. This is your elevator pitch, right? This is your chance to look brilliant. in 3 sentences or less,
yeah.
Probably. On Twitter, right? Think about what you're tweeting. Like, I fool around a little bit on Twitter. You'll find me saying some silly things, but I also tweet a lot of great content in my area.
Yeah.
So, for that writer who wants to do that, they need to, when they go and follow 10 people, it should be 10 people in their area of interest. Okay. Follow 10 other writers, or 20 other writers,
mm-hmm.
and tweet their content. Don't be so tremendously focused on tweeting your own stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It works.
Yeah.
I don't know that that's really 4 things. I would say this too. Choose a time to do your Twitter work.
Mm.
Choose like 1 to 2 mornings a week. Stick with it for an hour and then shut it off. Because one of the things that happens to so many writers is the tail starts wagging the dog.
Mm.
And then they're not writing anymore because they're so crazy about trying to work their social media platform. And it's diminishing returns. So
yeah, it seems to me something that you want to do a little bit over a long period of time, not a lot in one day.
I mean, you can, obviously we all have our interests. There are days where I get going and I'm very interested in, I keep lists as well, which I find useful.
Mm-hmm. List of people you follow.
This is not going to be necessarily simple for the new Twitter user, but there's a way to create lists and you can create themes for the lists. So I might have a list called poet friends, authors, editors, agents, whatever these are. And then that keeps everybody grouped together. And if you're in the mood for thinking about agents one day, you can go and gather, you know, look at your agent list and tweet a bunch of stuff, you know, about agents that day or whatever.
Yeah, that's good. That's smart. So, you know, you have also used traditional publishing tactics to share your books. And recently I know that you had a book that was picked up by Oprah Magazine. Can you tell us, you know, just briefly how you share your books like that?
The secret to getting on
exactly.
Oprah.
Exactly. I want to know it.
Oh, we do too. We do not know how it got picked up. So all I can say is, you know, you opened by saying we use traditional tactics as well, and that's true. We do some press release type work, and that author also had a private publicist. And we have a very large audience. We have something like, the last stats I looked at the other day, we have something like 3.35 million impressions a month.
That's great.
Right. So the question is, you know, where did that get seen? We don't know.
Yeah.
So I'm so sorry that I can't give the Oprah secret out. I can tell you the really nice thing was that once they found one of our books and liked it, they asked us for other titles.
Wow. That's great.
And once you're in, you're in.
But. Yeah. I mean, I think it's smart to hire a publicist to send out press releases. And to, I mean, sometimes self-publishers can get so focused on social media that they forget, you know, there are tried and true tactics that traditional publishing has been using for, you know, decades.
Well, and unless your platform is tremendously large, you're not going to be able to reach who you need to reach just through your own social media platform.
Yeah.
So a publicist, but it's going to cost you. Okay. A good publicist for maybe say 10 hours worth of work will cost you about maybe $1,600 or so, $1,600, $2,000. Excuse me. And you know, they might contact maybe 50 contacts. The good thing about the publicist is they are trusted in the industry. Mm-hmm. If you have someone who has relationships, those are relationships you don't have.
Yeah.
And when you think about it, what you're really paying that publicist for is their connections.
Mm-hmm.
So, but again, you know, what's your ultimate purpose? If you want to make money, this may not work out for you.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. So I want to kind of switch gears and talk about, you know, your experience with Story Cartel and the novelist, your novella that you shared on Story Cartel, which is really good, by the way. Everyone needs to read that book if you're a writer. It's a great way to get a sense of the writing process through story. You know, there's a lot of writing books out there, but this helps you see the writing process through a real story, and it's really beautifully written. So why did you, Laura, decide to give your book away for free on Story Cartel?
Well, because you asked.
I did ask, that's true.
Now, you know, I only did that on Story Cartel. I didn't do that anywhere else. So and it was a limited time. Mm-hmm. And for me, it was, honestly, I think I told you at the time, it was an experiment.
Yeah.
And I was willing to experiment with The Novelist because it's my book. I would probably not have done that with some of my other authors' books. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to try it out.
Yeah.
And see what it was like. And also for me, The Novelist is a departure from my other work. So most of my audience looks to me for nonfiction. Mm. And it just seemed like the perfect book to do an experiment with.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So I know, you know, you got a lot of positive reviews from Story Cartel readers, but there were a few negative reviews. And a lot of them didn't seem to understand that it was kind of more literary fiction, that it wasn't supposed to have a real, you know, edge of your seat gripping plot. So
well, everything puts different people get put to the edge of their seat by different things.
Very true. That's very true.
There were people really not, and they said it on Amazon as well, but they said it on Facebook too, who said, you know, I couldn't stop reading, or I didn't know, and I didn't want it to end, or I was so upset when it ended. One person was reading it on an e-reader and said she screamed when it ended because she didn't actually realize that she was close to the end of the book because she didn't, I guess, see the little indicator on her reader. So she kind of quote unquote turned to the page without knowing it. The book ended and she yelled. She didn't want it to end.
That's great.
Which is funny. Now, you said something. What was your question? I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, it's great. That's fun. So I was just wondering how you dealt with the negative reviews.
Oh, well, first of all, I have to say I've probably had more unfriendly negative reviews with some of my other books, you know, where someone says, you know, there's nothing here at all. Wow. Away. None of these were like that. These people were very polite. Mm. And so even the negative reviewers, they said things like, I'm so sorry I have to say this. It's kind of cracked me up. And in fact, ended up saying a good number of, you know, complimentary things about the book, even as they were saying, this book didn't work for me.
Yeah, that's good.
But for me, the value of that kind of review where someone says, this book didn't work for me, is as a writer, I can listen to that and maybe take it or leave it. Mm-hmm. So if the person creates a case, which unfortunately not a lot of negative reviewers do not. They just say things like, you know, no one said that
right.
On the list, but right. In other words, the spirit of it is that, and then they don't tell you why, and you can't learn anything from that. But if a person says why it didn't work for them, I think then as a writer, I can learn something, possibly learn something. Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the big jokes in The Novelist is there's a lot of underlying kind of inside joking going on between the main character and me, right? So the main character is saying things like she doesn't understand how Marilyn Robinson won the Pulitzer with Gilead, you know, this book that's just about an old man who looks out a window and he doesn't go anywhere. You know, and she's saying this. Well, that is me kind of making fun of myself already because I know that The Novelist is going to be a book where someone basically stays in the same physical space to take her journey. Right. So I am using the main character to make a joke.
That's
well,
great.
You know, I don't know. I'm sorry. I'm getting lost as well.
No, it's funny. Love it.
I don't know why I'm telling you this. Oh dear. Anyway,
so you used some of those as a way to learn
That's what we were talking about. Forgive me. I get off and tell a story, and I get lost in the story.
That's great.
Well, so the point is, if someone says, then, you know, this book didn't work for me because the main character didn't go anywhere, I kind of have to say, well, then this is just not your kind of book, because I already knew what kind of book it was, and my main character was making a joke about that right up front. Mm. There are different kinds of stories, and different kinds of readers enjoy different kinds of stories. Mm. Gilead did win the Pulitzer with a story about an old man who looked out a window and didn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's true.
Yeah. So anyway, it's okay. I don't mind. And I've been an editor for a long time, and I tell the writers I work with, I say, don't argue with people who give you negative reviews, and don't take it too hard. Mm. And particularly if you get reviews that are at polar opposites. Mm. So if you get, like, say, a lot of 5-star and 1-star or 5-star, 2-star, be happy for that, because what it means is you have a really strong voice. Mm. And the reason people hate it so much when they hate it is because you've done such a good job with a voice that they really despise.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, that's okay, because your 5-star reviewers are telling you that they loved the voice. Right. So.
Mm. Right. Yeah, I think that we shouldn't look at negative reviews as a bad thing. We should look at them as, you know, either a way to learn, like you talked about, mm-hmm. or a way to find our audience. You know, when someone gives you a negative review that mm-hmm. is like, this just didn't speak to me, right. That's great. You know, that person is not part of your audience, and you can keep going and find someone else.
Right.
Our goal is just to find the people that love our work, to share our story, and we can't control the outcome. I think too many people worry about trying to control the outcome, trying to make sure that their story is just celebrated everywhere. What we can do is we can celebrate our story and share it with the world and see what happens.
That is just, listen, one of my favorite articles on Monday, the 200th birthday of Pride and Prejudice, was an article called 7 People Who Hated Pride and Prejudice.
That's great.
It was like, you know, Virginia Woolf hated Pride and Prejudice. Well, okay. You know, no one, you, if you write a book everyone celebrates, I don't know. I don't even think that's possible.
Yeah.
Nor desirable.
Yeah.
Because it means you don't have a focused voice.
Yeah. That's good. Well, Laura, thank you so much for your time. Where can people find you online?
Find me.
To read your books and to get more information about you.
I would say just follow me on Twitter, because I'm also an editor. Mm-hmm. And so I'm always interested in meeting new writers.
Yeah.
And so that's LL Barkat. That's it. It's at twitter.com/LL Barkat.
Great.
Is a place to find me.
That's great. Laura, thank you so much for coming to talk to us today. It was really fun.
Okay. Thank you, Joe.
All right. Bye.
Have a great day. Bye-bye.